Hello students, how you doing? Okay, so today we're going to be looking at networks and the effect of using them. And in this course, I'll be showing you the key things you need to probably concentrate as you prepare for your examination. Okay, now most computer systems are now connected in some ways to form a network. Okay, now this ranges from a basic home computer of only a few devices to a very large network. Now, every computer appliances you see at home are connected in some ways, okay? And it can reach from a few to a very large, okay? The whole essence of why we set it up is to share the resources. A good example could be printers or even your softwares. Okay, even the internet itself. Okay, so let's look at those common network terms. Okay, so let's start with the network interface card. Now we'll talk about network interface card. They are needed to allow a device to connect to a network. That's what it does. A device that is needed, right, to allow to connect to a network. So every computer, be it a laptop, a desktop, has a network interface card, and the whole essence of what it's doing is to allow that particular device to connect to a network. Okay, now another thing you need to know is we also have wireless network interface card. Okay, and they are also used to connect devices to the internet or also to other networks. Okay, and however, they use wireless connectivity, utilizing what we call an antenna to communicate with network by microwave. They are usually plugged into the USB port or to be part of the internal integrated circuit. That simply means that when your NIC is bad in your laptop, you could actually get the external one. Okay, yeah. Okay, the next one is the media access control, which is the MAC address. Now, the MAC address is the address that is found on the network interface card. Okay, and it's a number which uniquely identifies a device when it is connected to a network. It's what identifies that device when it's connected, and it's made up of 48 bits, and they are shown in six groups. So there are eight of them. We have eight groups. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Six groups. So there are eight in each of them. Okay, with a general format. Here we have the manufacturer code and we have the device serial number. So the NNN is for the manufacturing code, and then the 3 for the manufacturing code, the 3 for the device serial number. Okay, now the MAC address is sometimes referred to as the physical address because it uniquely identifies a device. Okay, now MAC address are useful when trying to identify network faults, because they never change. It's different from the IP. I'm going to look at it in a jiffy. It's different from the IP because they never change, right? Which makes it a more reliable method of identifying the data sender and the data receiver in the network. The next one is the internet protocol address. Now, in the internet protocol address, okay, whenever a computer connects to the internet, Whenever your laptop, you can see my laptop is connected, right? It is giving an IP address. In fact, an address is being assigned to that device. Now, this is usually assigned to the computer by the internet service provider, because the operation of the internet is based on a set of rules. That's protocol. Okay, so it is necessary to supply an IP address. So that's just what it has. So anytime your computer is connected, it is given an IP address, right? The internet protocol defines that rule that must be agreed by the sender and receiver of data communicating to the internet. So an IP address identifies the location of a device on a network. Okay, now this simply means that if you're using a laptop at home, you have been given an IP address when connected to the internet. Yeah. So if you're using your laptop at home, you have an IP address when you connect to the internet. If you take the laptop to the coffee shop, you log into the internet again, you'll be assigned a new IP address. Unlike the MAC address that remains constant, the IP address changes each time you log into an internet in a different location or to a network in a different location. And then there are two versions of the IP. We have IPv4 and IPv6. The IPv4 is based on 32 bits, okay, and the address is written in four groups of 8 bits. Okay, so 32 bits, four groups of 8 bits. Now, the IPv4 uses what we call a 128 bit address. Okay, IPv4 is 32, IPv6 is 128, and it takes the form of 8 groups, okay, of hex digits. Okay, so we have an example like this, right? So usually the one we use is the IPv4. Okay, data packet. Now, data is moved around the network, and they are moved in that form of what we call data packets. So whenever a user is sending some data, it will split it up into a number of packets. Now, each of those packets are what transmitted separately. Okay, so the packet of data will usually have what we call a header, which contains one, the sender IP address, the receiver IP address, identity number of the packet, the packet size, how many data packets can make up the whole message. So all this, there's an IP, there's a sender IP, there's a receiver IP, there's the identity number of the packet, the packet size, right, which is more or less to ensure that you are receiving, to ensure the receiving station can check if all of the packets have arrived intact. Now, what happens, just a quick one, when the router, right, receives a packet of data, it checks the destination IP address against the one stored in the routing table, which allows the router to determine the packet next step in the path. Now, data packet will pass through a number of router before it reaches its final destination. Okay, all the information in the data package allow all information in the packet data header allow the package to be reassembled in the correct order. Now, a video of this has been sent, and we did a question came up on this, and we talked about it. You can check it up in the videos on past people's and people one, and you see it right there. Hubs are hardware device. That's the first one that can have the numbers of other devices connected to them. Now, the whole essence of the hub is that they're primarily used to connect devices together to form what we call a local area network, usually in the same building. Okay, but this is one special thing about the hub. Whenever a data package is sent to the hub at one of its ports, it will broadcast it to every devices that are connected to it, whether it's intended for it or not. For switches, they are the intelligent version of hubs. The same thing with the hubs, they connect a number of devices to form a LAN. But unlike the hub, the switch stores the MAC address of all devices on the computer, on the network. So each port on the switch connected to a device, we have a matching MAC address called the lookup table, right? So you can see port 1, this is it, port 2, this is it, port 3, this is it, port 4, this is it, port 5, etc, etc. Now, this is diagram for it. Now, let's talk about, we've seen lookup table. Now, let's talk about using the lookup table. Now, what happens is, whenever a data packet is sent, a switch is going to match the MAC address. We've talked about the MAC address, that is the address that comes with your network interface card, right? Or an incoming data, right? Above the port, it will not direct it to the correct device. Discipline means that none of the other devices will see this data packet. So if a data packet arrives in port 2, the MAC address is going to be what? The MAC address, if it's in port 2, is going to be this. And so on and so forth. The MAC address, if the MAC address in the data package is this, right, then it will switch. Then the switch will connect the data packet to port 4 only. Okay. Now, in summary, let's look at this. Both hubs and switch are used to what? Connect device in the network. That's a similarity. They both use data package. That's also a similarity. Hubs will send data package to every device in the network. Switch will send data package to a specific device. Now, that's what the difference between the hub and, of course, the switch. In terms of the switch, security is more higher than the hubs. And a switch has a lookup table that determines the destination of the device. A switch in there also uses what we call a MAC address to locate what the destination device. Now, the next one is what? Bridges. Let's talk about bridges. Bridges are devices that connect one device to another land. I'm going to explain this. I know bridges are a little bit tricky, but I'll explain them. Stay with me. So, they are devices that connect one land to another land that uses the same protocol or communication. Now, in essence, a bridge is often used to connect together different parts of your local area network so that they function as a single LAN. Now, these are computers, right? They are connected to what? A switch. It's connected to a switch or hub, whichever one. Now, we have a server. Now, these are the ISPs. Now, the bridge now will now connect these two of them, and it will see it as what? A single LAN. So if there should be a router here, the router is now going to connect the bridge to the internet. Okay? Now, unlike routers, bridges cannot communicate with external network. What are the external networks? Your internet. And this is where the router comes in. Because for routers, they route those data package from one network to another network based on the IP addresses, okay? And this can do this. Now watch this. This can do this using each router here. So each router here has its own what? IP address, right? So what happens is this, okay? And I know this is tricky and I want to explain this, okay? So we have computers here, computer here, computer here. You have the switch here. Now, all these are connected to this. We're not talking about which one is dummy, which one is smart. Although this, your hubs and your switch, they help to connect your computers, right? And then we have the server. But this is where, and all this forms what we call local area network because they are within the building, right? But this is where it gets dicey. Because now, the router is what helps to be able to what, join that LAN toward the internet, right? So when you see a network connect to the internet, this is possible with the router. And don't forget, all these are hardware devices. You can see a picture of this right here. This is a picture of this right here. So now what happens is that once this is connected, now the switch here is now connected to here. Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4 ports. Okay, that each of these can be connected to. So what we are simply saying is, when it comes to the router, right, they help us to be able to route data packets from one network to another network. And this is simply based on the fact that is on the IP address. Of course, we talked about the IP address, which is the internet protocol that changes anytime we're in a different location and we connect to the internet. I hope that makes sense. Okay, now let's just dive a bit about it, because I just want to explain all this you see when you actually read your textbook. Now, it says here that when a data packet is received at one end of its port, now the router is going to inspect the IP address, and now it's going to determine whether the data packet is meant for its own network or for another network. In that case, is it an external network? Okay, is it, are you saying the router is like, okay, you want me to connect to the internet? And that's the most time when there is no internet, it shows you are connected. It really means that the network is connected but does not have access to the external network. Okay, now if it's meant for its own network, then the data packet is then routed to what? A local switch or hub. Okay, all right, I know it's not easy when it comes to networks, but as much as possible I'm trying to explain all this. Now let's look at this, right? So all these are computers, all these are computers, and each of these computers is connected to what? To a hub or a switch, and this is what helps you to be able to form a network to share resources. Okay, now this is the same thing, computers connected to the network, and this is a switch. Now all these are what we call your routers. Okay, your routers. So you can see that this is S for switch, C for computers, right? So it's a cool abbreviation. Okay, so now each of them have been linked with a router. Now it now determines if you're connecting to an external network or if it's going to be an internal network. Okay, all right. And there is a description here that talks about how this is possible. You can see that data packets are sent from C1 to what? R1. Now this is C1 here, sent to the switch and then sent to R1. Then again, the R1 now checks the IP address and knows the data package are not intended for any device on network 1. That packet will then forward on to what? The internet, what? RO. Where is the RO? Here. Right? The RO. And then what happens again? The IP address, right, which is the header of the data package, will now match that of what? RO4. And you can see RO4 is what? Right there. Okay. And it goes on and on. And the RO4 will now recognize the IP address of each of the data package, refer to network 4, and then forward it towards to the S4, which should direct each data package to C10. Okay, and it goes on and on. Now, usually there are questions being asked about the comparisons of routers and bridges. We'll talk about the comparisons, but we are comparing them, looking at similarities and then differences as much as possible. We were talking about the comparing and constructing. Now let's look at routers. Now for routers, the main objective of a router is to connect various types of networks together. That's for router, right? So they are connecting various types of what? Network together. Now for the bridge, the main objective of a bridge is to connect LANs together. Connect multiple LANs to function as what? A single LAN. For router, the router data scans a device IP address, but for bridge, it scans a device MAC address. Another one is data is sent out using data packet, and it's for bridge is also sent out using data packet, because there are questions that will come that talk about comparing and constructing. Okay, for in the case of the router, you can connect a network. We use what? Different protocols. And that's true. But for bridge, it has to be the same protocol. Now we use a routing table to direct data to the current device, because if your network is coming, it wants to ensure that this is going to the right switch. Bridge, they don't need to use a routing table. Remember, a bridge is just to combine to connect multiple LANs to function as a single LAN. Now, a router has more than two ports. A bridge has only two ports. I think there's a picture here. Okay, I think that should be in the back or something. Let me see if I can get a picture to show you bridge computer network. Okay. Let me get a picture to show you bridge. Okay, so this is a good example of a bridge right here. This is a bridge right here. This is also a bridge. So you can see that with the numbers of ports it has. Just two ports, okay? Okay, let's talk about Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. So let's talk about Wi-Fi, right? Now, when we talk about Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, the first thing that comes to mind is both of them are wireless communication between devices. For example, you want to send a file. You tell somebody on your Bluetooth, I want to send you a file. The person has to call the Bluetooth. And then you can now send that file to the person, right? You have to pair. In that case, you have to pair, right? The devices have to be paired and then connections can then be sent, right? So both the Wi-Fi, which is the wireless fidelity, and then the Bluetooth offer what we call the wireless communication between the devices. Now, they both uses electromagnetic radiation as the carrier of the data transmission, okay? Now, I'm just going to talk about the key things about the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth, which is very, very essential. You don't have to really put all energy in all the text, right? Now, what are Bluetooth useful for, right? Bluetooth is useful for, although you're able to use an encryption key called a secured personal area network, your WPAN, right? WPAN. Now, Bluetooth is useful for transferring data between two or more devices which are close together. Okay, so they're usually less than 30 meters distance. So it means that if you're far from each other, you might not actually get to. If two things happening, right? The farther you are, the more slower the connection is. They're just within less than 30 meters. If you're out of range, then probably you're going to lose connection. Okay, all right. Now, with the speed of data transmission. When the speed of data transmission is not critical, it's useful when the speed of transmission is not critical. It's not something that you're not transferring something very, very high. Okay. For low bandwidth applications, for example, when you're sending music files from your mobile phone to a headset, for example. Okay. Now, for Wi-Fi, they send and receive video waves in several different frequency bands, like 2.4. and 5 gigahertz, which are the most common at the moment, okay? Now, each band is also further split into channels, right? So we have the 2.4, we have 5 gigahertz, right? And of course, the 5 gigahertz are the more faster data transfer rate, okay? But a shorter signal reach, okay? Now, when are Wi-Fi useful? Yeah, useful when it's best suited to operate a full-scale network, right? Because it offers a much faster data transfer rate, better range, better security than even Bluetooth. Okay, let's quickly just dive into the features between the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi. For transmission frequency use, for Bluetooth you have 2.4 gigahertz. For Wi-Fi you're having 2.4 and then 5.0 gigahertz. There's even 3.6, but usually it's within 2.4 and 5.0 gigahertz. Okay, now the next one is the data transfer rate. For data transfer rate of Bluetooth, we have 25 megabits per second, but for the Wi-Fi, you have 250 megabits per second. Then, for data transfer rate, Another thing you have to look at is the maximum effective range. The range between a Bluetooth is less than 30 meters. For Wi-Fi, okay, you have within the range of 100 meters, although it can be obstructed by walls. Now, if you have a concrete wall in your office, at home, and the wall is very thick, that can actually obstruct the signals, okay, for passing through. Okay, so you need to know that. Okay, so therefore therefore reducing that effective range just to a few meters. Okay, for maximum connection, Bluetooth is up to 7 devices. I think 5. Okay, I've seen 3. I've seen 4. They might not be up to 7, right? But might not be up to 7. But for Wi-Fi, it depends on your router. Okay, it depends on your router. Right, so as much as possible when you are connected to the internet, depends on your router. All right, types of data transmission security. Now, for Bluetooth, they use a key matching encryption. Okay, now what do I mean key matching encryption? Now, when you want to pair in Bluetooth, I know you've seen this. If you want to pair, they're going to send you a key, and you also they will send the sender a key, send the receiver a key. Now, both of you, we have to click on pair. So if I click on pair, I will have to wait on you to click on that same key to pair before a connection can be established. But for a Wi-Fi, we have what we call the Wi-Fi protected access, which is a WPA. So that simply means that if you want to connect to your Wi-Fi, you have to put the password that has been assigned for that network for you to actually continue. Okay? All right, and the next one, I think that's the final one, is cloud computing. Now, I'm going to talk about cloud computing. Now, questions can come out from cloud computing, right? Because it's the future, really, right? Now, we'll talk about cloud computing, or more appropriately, cloud storage. Okay, so what are those cloud storage? Your Google Drive, OneDrive, iCloud, Dropbox. Okay, and there are also other cloud storage that are not. I think these are the most common cloud storage that at least is popular in the market, right? Because of their companies. For Microsoft, they make use of OneDrive. For Google, they make use of Google Drive. For Apple, they make use of iCloud. Right? Now, we'll talk about cloud computing. Is a method of data storage where data is stored on remote server. Of course, there are thousands of servers in many different locations. Now, the same data is stored in more than one server. Okay, in case of a maintenance or repair. So it simply means that whenever you are uploading your data to Google Drive, yes, you are seeing it on Google Drive, but there are so many servers that file is. In case they want to carry out a maintenance, in case there is a damage, and these servers are linked together. And another beauty about the cloud storage is clients can be able to access their data at any time. In fact, literally, you don't need to use the same laptop. You can upload to your Google Drive and you can use somebody else's laptop to access that particular information you have uploaded. All you have to do is to log in to that cloud storage and then you have access to that information. Okay? Now, although this is not a data redundancy, because we are having these informations stretched in real servers. Okay? Now, the physical environment of the cloud storage is owned and managed by hosting companies. And I've mentioned these companies. You have Apple, you have Microsoft, you have Google. Okay? Now, there are three common cloud storage systems. Although we have not seen questions on this, but in this new syllabus, you might be expecting questions on that. We have public cloud, private cloud, and hybrid cloud. Let me talk about them. Now, public cloud, this is a storage environment where the customer and clients and cloud storage providers are different companies. Okay, different companies. I can be working in Amazon and I can have my information on Google. It's a public cloud. Okay? I'm right here in Nigeria and I can upload my cloud to Google. As long as the public cloud is a free cloud, public cloud about free, it's accessible. You don't have to buy it. Like when I mean by that, it comes free, right? It's accessible. Although you pay for an upgrade, but it's accessible. All you have to do is just type to drive.google.com and then you type of OneDrive, iCloud, and you can access this information. Then we have private cloud. Private cloud, this is a storage provided by a dedicated environment behind the company firewall. This simply means that customers, clients, and cloud storage providers are integrated and operate as a single entity. Now, for you to be able to access iCloud, you must have either an Apple device, when I mean Apple device, usually an iPhone or a Macintosh or a MacBook, because it strictly operates on their products. I think the same thing as OneDrive. Okay? But the likes of Google Drive, Dropbox, they are public clouds. Okay? You don't have to use an Android device. You can use anything. If you're using the Macintosh, you can still upload your files to the Google Drive because it's a public cloud. Then we have hybrid cloud. This is a combination of two previous environments, which is both public and both private. Some data resides in the private cloud, and they are less sensitive and less commercial data can be accessed from a public cloud storage provider. Google Drive is both I call Google Drive a hybrid cloud because it gives privilege for public and also private. Okay, I need to make that very, very clear. Now let's talk about advantages of cloud storage. Now, one of the advantages of cloud storage is, for cloud storage, your information can be accessed at any time, from any device, anywhere in the world. If you're uploading in Nigeria, you can be in Canada, you access that device. You can access that piece of information. It's not restricted to any geographic region, okay? As long as there's internet access. So this is cloud storage. Cloud storage means you're uploading to somewhere else server. Okay, so you need an internet connection to upload and also to access. If you don't have internet connection, you cannot access Google Drive. That's the truth. And another good advantage about the cloud storage is there is no need for a customer to carry external storage devices with them. You don't need to carry external hard drive. I'm letting you know. You can just put it on the cloud storage. Okay, or even use the same computer to store and retrieve your information. There's no need for that. Once you put your information, you can access them anywhere. Now, the cloud also provides users with what we call remote backup of data. In case there's a disaster, in case there's a data lost, you can actually recover those things into your computer should you get a new one. And that's where the iCloud comes in. Okay, I think the Android also devices have also integrated that as well. So even if you lose your device, for instance, if you lose your iPhone, you can easily get those informations just by logging into your iCloud account, and all those things will be uploaded to your new device. It's that simple. Okay, now if a customer or a client has a failure of their hard disk or even the backup device, cloud storage will always allow recovery of their data, okay? Which is also another cool advantage. Now, the cloud system offers almost unlimited. I'm careful with that word, unlimited. You can get an unlimited storage, but it comes at a price, okay? It's not free. They will just, or you want unlimited, you just give it. It's not free. You have to pay for it. But that's a good thing, literally, because I can store as many information as I want to store, and I don't have to bother myself about, oh, it's getting filled up. okay, unlike our normal fixed hard drive or portable hard drive. Okay, now let's talk about disadvantages of cloud computing. Now, for disadvantages of cloud computing, security aspect. Okay, security aspect of storing data in the cloud. Security aspect talks about your information can be hacked. Yeah. As long as it's the internet, it's not 100% secured. People can get access to your login details and they can get access to those files. So why we look at the advantages, the beauty of having a cloud storage, we also have to look at the downsides. People can actually access those information without your permission. And that's what hacking is. Gaining unauthorized access to what? Either your computers or to your personal information. Unauthorized. So they don't have the formal authorization. They're using the backend to do that. Now, if a customer or a client has a slow or unstable internet connection, they could have issues accessing or downloading their data. So it means you need to have a stable internet connection. Okay? Then again, we have to look at the cost. If you want to get a larger capacity, okay, you have to pay for it. So cost can be high if a large storage capacity or a high download data is required. And also, you need to know this, we are not eliminating the fact that there could be a potential failure of the cloud storage company. Google could crash, okay, which is, okay, I know most of you are saying it's nearly impossible, I know, but it's not possible. We have to look at the realization, and as a student, you have an exam on Friday, right, and they're asking you the disadvantage of cloud storage, cloud computing. That should not be far-fetched. You have to put that into question, because there is that possibility, right, that it could happen. Even though they have a very tight security, there's that possibility. So you have to put it down, right? Your examiners are going to mark you, they're not going to mark you down. It's possible. As long as this is the internet world, anything is possible, okay? So, and then you can have a loss of backup, not just you, but millions of people as well, okay? All right, I think those are the issues of when it comes to cloud storage. Those are the key things. The types of cloud which we've looked at, very very important. So please, it's very important. The three common cloud storage systems, advantages and advantage of the cloud, and that's all. The next thing is common network environments. We'll look at our extranet, intranet, and what? The internet. Although, we are going to come back to this in chapter 10. We'll talk about it in depth in chapter 10. But let's talk about network types. We have three types of networks. Local area network, wireless local area network, and the wide area network. The metropolitan area network is not part of the scope. You see it in computer science. This is ICT. This is IGCSE ICT, right? You see it in IGCSE computer science. But this is just what it is. Just the three of them. Now, for local area network, LAN, they are within a building or a geographical. They are geographically near to each other. A good example in the organization I'm working, currently working, we have a LAN. We have a network. Okay, now a typical LAN consists of numbers of computers and devices. What are those devices? For example, printers. Okay, that's if we're using that banks, they do it. And these are connected to hubs. These are connected to what? Switches. And we've looked at hubs, we've looked at switches, and we said switches is what is the intelligent version of what? A hub. And one of the hubs or switches will usually be connected to a router to allow the LAN to connect to the internet. Okay, now let's talk about the advantages, okay, of networking these computers using the local area network. Okay, for one, they allow sharing of resources. okay? They allow sharing of resources. What are those resources they are sharing? They are either sharing your hardwares, and a good example of your hardware could be printers and scanners. Now, if you go to banks, watch this. If you go to banks, I want to explain this in terms. If you go to banks, you will see that they have just one printer. Okay, now this printer they're having, okay, this printer they're having. Now you see that all computers are connected to that printer. And the whole essence of this is so that you are able to share resources, because it will be more costly to buy printers for each laptop. So you could actually buy one printer, connect the laptops to the printer, and then you can actually send files to it. Although, whenever, if one laptop is sending if a document to the printer for printing, and another one is sending, the other one has to be on queue. Okay? And not only that, if they're also connected, you can be able to, right, share softwares. Like word processors, photo editing softwares. Okay, now they permit easy communication, right? They permit easy communication between users of the LAN. Yeah, okay, so that's another good advantage. They permit what? There's that easy communication between users of the LAN by using simple text messaging between the computers on the network. Now they use a network administrator to ensure security. And the use of LAN is constantly monitored. Now, this is done by a software, a firewall, that you can actually monitor people who are actually making use of what? The network. To see who is accessing sites, who is going into this. But it's quite expensive to get it, right? Because it's a piece of hardware that you have to just connect your router to, so that it acts as what? A firewall. So whatever anybody is accessing, it goes in there, right? We can see it, we can disable it, we can remove the person from the network as much as possible. Disadvantages, on the other hand, is this. Easier spread of viruses throughout the whole network. Once you are connected to a network, it's easier to spread viruses. Queue for shared resources can be frustrating. Now imagine you want to print an urgent document, and like five computers have already sent documents to the printer. It can be frustrating because you have to actually wait for your own turn for the printer to be able to print. Slower access to what? External networks. You have to put that in. Slower access to what? External networks. Increased security risks when compared to standalone computers. There's that security because computers are thrown together, so there's that increased security risk. Now, another thing that I want to talk about as an advantage is if the main server breaks down, right, the network will no longer function properly. There are cases that I'm talking about when your router connects to the internet. There are cases where if there's any issue with the router, you can't have access to the internet. Even though there's internet, you can't have access to it because the router is down. Okay? Or to our ISPs, when their base stations are down, you can't have access. So it's connected, but you're not browsing. Okay? And that's its advantage as well. Now, the one we are talking about is the LAN. Now, that LAN uses what we call a RUJ47. Is a registered JAL47 cable. I think for my laptop, I have it here. Okay, I don't think I have it here in my laptop, but there are some laptops, right? Old laptops that have it. Let me show you a picture of the RJ45 connectors. Let me show you how it looks like. This is how it looks like. Okay, so if you check this, just to show you how it looks like. So this is a good example of what I'm talking about. Now, if you check your computers, laptops, you're going to see that there is, let me check, laptops with Ethernet port. We call them an Ethernet port. This is a good example of what I'm talking about. Ethernet port. Just want to show you Okay, I've seen one here. I want a closer view of the internet port. I've seen one. Okay, I don't know if this is clear, but let me use this. Now, if you watch this, this is a good example of the internet port right here. And this is a Lenovo laptop. This is a Lenovo laptop, so it's right here. Okay, you see it's right here. Let me find. Okay, this is another one as well. And okay, good. I think this is the perfect one I'm looking for. Good. Now, the RJ45 connector is actually connected to the internet port. This is a good one. Okay, you can see that. Can you see this? So this is now connected. Okay, the RJ45 is now connected to what? The internet port. This one is your VGA. So this laptop has two internet ports, right? There are some that has one. Okay, some laptop has one. So it's fine. Okay, all right. Just wanted to show you that. Okay, now, but for the wireless, okay, for the wireless, there is no need for that. Okay, there are no wires, there are no cables, because they are wireless network communication. They use what we call radio. For us, we use a radio signal. That's all. They use infrared. Okay, so if you check here, I'm connected wirelessly. Right, you can see I'm connected to a network, right? Connected to it. So there is no internet cable that is plugged on it. Now if it is plugged on it, you are going to see a sign that shows. Let me see if I can draw it. Something like this. I think something like this, not really sure. But it goes like that. Yeah, so think something like this, right? This one is for the Wi-Fi, right? It is for the wireless, but if it's the one that is connected, right, you will see it something like this. Okay, so okay. Now these devices are known as what we call access points. Okay, now the access points are what you have placed on each of for my school, for example, they are placed in each designated areas. Okay, now in one building, in one floor, we can have like two access points, although it's not enough, but then again, it can still serve. You place it on areas, right, so that you can be able to access it. Okay, so that access point is what gives you access to what? That internet, and it's sending the feedback to what? To your switch, right? And then the router is now doing the job. Now they are connected to what we call a wired network at fixed locations. Now, because of the limited range, most commercial LANs need several APs to permit uninterrupted wireless connection. So just one will not be enough. That means you have to connect a lot of them. At least, if you're a two-story building, at least you should be able to have. If you have like four floors or four rooms, okay, at least three in each floor, three, okay, and that's fine, right? Three, and that should be able to serve. Okay, so you're having one here, and that's fine. But then again, I talked about your walls. If your walls are thick walls, then you might experience somewhat interruptions. Okay? Okay. Now, this is what I'm talking about. So watch this. Now, the AAP receives and transmits data between the WLAN and the wired network structures. Now, end users access the wired LAN through what? The LAN adapters which are built into their system. Okay, now, you have an access point here, you have an access point here. Now, this access point is serving this computer, and they're all connected to what? To the router. Can you see that? Let's talk about differences between the wireless networking, the wireless local area network, and the local area network, which is what we call them wired networking. You're telling me that's wireless networking, wired networking. Okay, now for wireless, it's easier to expand the network, right? Because you're not connecting using cables. For the wired, on the other hand, it produces a more reliable and stable network because it is wired, right? It is whatever network is flowing from your from the router is going direct. It's a dedicated network. But for the wireless, your walls, wind, a lot of factors can actually dampen the network, and they are subjected to what interference. Now, this device, on the other hand, increases mobility. So you can actually move around as long as you're within the range of what the APs, which is your access points. Okay? But for the wired, data transfer rate tends to be very, very fast. Because there will be no dead spot. Okay, but another difference is that you cannot move it around, it's wired now. So you have to stick, you have to be within that wired connection. Although for the wireless, there's no cabling around. Okay, so there's that safety improvement, and it increases what? Flexibility. Okay, now there's an increased chance of interference from external sources. Okay, there's increased chance of interference because it's wireless. Your walls could act as interference, the wind, a lot of factors could actually affect it. But for wired, to set it up is cheaper, right? But you need to buy and install more cables if you really want to expand or something like that, right? Okay. And one last one, data is less secured than the wireless, because it is easier to intercept radio waves and microwaves than cable. Okay, so you protect it using what? Encryption. For the wireless, don't need password now. It's just once you plug it direct, you are connected. For the wireless, you need password because it's easy to intercept. Anybody that can intercept the network can actually connect to it. And if anybody knows the password, they can actually connect to your network. But for the wired, okay, the cable network lose the ability for devices to be mobile. You cannot carry it around. So you have to be close enough to allow for your cable connection. Okay? And mind you, not every laptops have that internet port. So for my laptop, I'll have to get the converter, the USB to Ethernet port converter, where I can plug in my USB. Okay, I can plug in my USB and then plug in what the internet, the RJ45 into what my internet port. Okay, so that works. Wide area network. Okay, now computers and network are situated in very long distance from each other. Okay, and this. I'm just looking for something. Now we'll talk about the wireless area network, the wide area network rather. We're talking about the internet. Okay, so the one usually makes use of what? Public communication, such as telephone lines or satellites. They can also use dedicated or leased communication lines, which can be less expensive and also more secure, less risk of hacking. So you can be able to access this network from anywhere. Okay, from anywhere. Now we talked about that numbers of LAN are joined together using a router, and then that router will now connect to what we call a wide area network. So for one, it can span across 100 kilometers to even 1,000 kilometers. For LAN, it's just between 10 meters to 1,000 meters, to just at least within the range of 1 kilometer. Okay. security issues regarding data transfers. Okay, we'll talk about it in chapter 8. It's fine. I think I've talked about it. It's right here. You could actually see content of it and get yourself abreast with it. Then passwords. I've also talked about passwords, but we use passwords for accessing, for many instances when accessing the internet. If you want to access your banking details, you need a password. If you want to access your email account, you need a password. If you want to access your social networking sites like your Facebook, your Snapchat, your TikTok, you need a password. So you cannot just open a Snapchat. You say no, you need to have an account with them and you need to put in your login details. And that's my password. Although for password, you need to have a strong password. And then we'll talk about it here as well as much as possible. Now, they said in your textbook, it said there are many more instances where you need to type in a password and in many cases a user ID. Okay, now it is important that passwords are protected. Using a strong password is important. Now, what do we do? Run anti-spyware softwares to make sure that your passwords are not being really bad. What are anti-spyware? They are software that are being installed on your laptop. They spy on you, right? They spy on you to check what you are doing. And what happens is that it will record all your activities on your laptop and convey it back to the programmer. So that's why it's advisable to change your password on a regular basis in case it comes into possession of what? Another what? Illegal or by accident. Password should not be easy to crack, so use a strong password. What are a strong password? A strong password should contain a capital letter, a numeric value, and then one special character. Yeah, and if you check modern networking sites, you will see that's what is required for you to create your password. If you put just all letters, they'll tell you that it's a weak password, so they don't accept it anymore. Okay. All right. So let's talk about. I know this is a long one, but let's talk about other authentication methods. Okay. Now, passwords are one of the most common type of authentication. What are authentications? Authentication simply means granting you access, authenticating to ensure that this is who this person says he is. And there are various ways to authenticate you. Password is one of them. But there are other ones. We have biometrics, your magnetic stripe, smart cards, physical token, electronic token, even your zero logins. And we're just going to look at this, just the key things on them as much as possible. Now, for zero logins, they rely on devices being smart enough to instantly recognize the user by numbers of features based on biometrics and behavioral patterns. Now, for zero login, you are not typing in anything, right? They can recognize it based on your biometrics and you putting in your patterns, okay? Instead of using passwords, like I said, the zero login system is going to build up what? A complex user based on two features. Biometrics, which is usually based on, is used on many smartphones as well for logging into your phones. You place your finger on it, okay, or your face, right? And your behavioral pattern talks about how you walk, your typing speed, your normal location, how you swipe the screen. Okay, so that's your login. Okay, so very, very important. But there are certain disadvantages to this. How do users know when they are being monitored? How do you know if and when you are being logged out? How protected is it in reality? But these are questions that we have to ask ourselves. Now we have magnetic stripe cards. Now your magnetic stripe cards are those cards you use in hotels, right? They're also used to swipe in for payment as much as possible. Okay. Now you see those cards, right? And we've also covered this in chapter 2. And we'll also look at it also in chapter 6. We're talking about ICT application, I think in banking as well. Okay. Now, the stripe is read by swiping into a card reader. And once you swipe into a card reader, right, you will see that indoors, For doors, if you swipe it in, it will form red, it will show green. That simply means you can be able to open the door. And once you close the door again, it's going to lock. So you need your card to be able to swipe in. If you go to all these big hotels, they use it as well. Okay, so data such as name, number, date of birth are all contained under magnetic stripe, okay, when used as security devices to allow entry to buildings. Okay, they also use holograms, which are designed to make forgery of the card more difficult. Okay, so it changes color or appear to have a moving object, okay, as the image is viewed from different angles. Because of this, it's difficult to copy. Okay, it prevents somebody simply photocopying a card and using it illegally. What are the advantages? Let's talk about the advantages, because in this course we just talk about advantages and disadvantages. For the advantages, they're easy to use. It is not an expensive technology. Magnetic cards can be remotely deactivated if lost or stolen. That's one good thing. If you've lost your card to your hotel room, simple, they will just deactivate it and get you a new one. The card can be multi-purpose. That is another good thing about magnetic stripe. You can use it for entering a building. You can use it as a door key card. You can also use it as a card in a vending machine to buy food. Okay? Now, disadvantages is less secured, right? Okay, because it can be copied. Okay, the card can wear out with a lot of use. If you keep using it, if you keep swiping it, to wear out. Magnetic readers often fail to read what the card on what first attempt. Okay, so that's another advantage. You keep trying it again. Smart cards. Now your smart cards, right? Usually they have a chip on it. Okay, so it acts as what we call a contactless card. It can be read from a distance. You don't have to swipe it through a card reader. Just put it on it to just see it. Okay. Now the chip on the smart card can store data such as your name, social security number, your date of birth, and even a PIN. Okay, so there is for security. There is for security devices. Or you have to, when you go to the building, you just put it on it. Let me show you a picture so that you don't imagine too much. Smart cards. Okay, so this is a good example of a smart card. Okay, yes, this is a smart card. Okay, so by the time you put that on it, it's going to read it and it will give you an entrance to a building. Okay, and there are lots of smart cards, lots of them. This is another smart card. You can see this Wi-Fi symbol on it, and there are lots of them as well. Okay. Now, if the card is in the wallet or pocket, and one of the card walks to the security gate, the readers on either side of the gate quickly scans the data stored on it. Or if there's a tag on it, right, it is being seen, and then access will be allowed. Fiscal token. This is fiscal token. Now, fiscal token is a form of authentication, right? Now users can interact with a login system used to improve that the user has possession of the token. Now, what does it mean? It has an internal clock. So whenever a PIN is entered, and they are used for banking transactions, really, for banking transactions, but also to log in banks. Okay, you see them with that fiscal token, they will hang it around themselves, and you have to use it to type in that PIN too, because it changes. Anytime you have been logged out, you have to type in another PIN. Okay, now when you enter a PIN and other authentication details are entered, then a one-time password is generated. The OTP is now shown on the small screen. The code changes, like I said, on a regular basis, and I think it's valid. Some is 30 seconds, some is less than 1 minute. Okay, now let's use banking as an example. When you log into your internet banking, right, and you want to carry out a transaction, the moment you enter your PIN, a one-time password is then shown on your physical token. Now, your physical token is going to be linked with your bank, right? Then a one-time password is going to be shown on that device screen, which is usually 8 digits. And what happens, the customer will now go into that transactional page and type in that code. Then it will give them access in two ways. If you want to log into your bank account and you have the physical token, you have to type in, once you type in your username and password, it's going to send you a one-time password on that physical token. Then you have to put that OTP into in it before it gets you access to your account. So there are so many ways this can work. Okay, then this is also another physical token. So we have examples of multi-factor authentications, a disconnected physical token, right, which is that other one, then a connected physical token. The disconnected is the first one, connected the second one, which transmits a one-time password directly to a computer or through a USB connector. Okay. Electronic token. Now, these are softwares installed on a user device, such as a smartphone. So, suppose a user wishes to log on to a website using their tablet computer. This website will require the electronic token to be used to authenticate the user. And that is what even Google is using. We call it two-factor authentication. It's an electronic token. So, anytime you are logging in, you must, right, if you enable it, you have to put in, right, that code to be able to get access. It's eight. There are eight. Right, there are eight numbers you have to put in. Right, I think there are eight or thereabout. You have to put in, and then you gain access to it. Okay, so this will just help you in your reading. So you don't have to just, it's not everything you just have to read. Okay. Of course, like I said, users already installed this electronic token app for Google. Google is Google Authenticator. We call it Google Authenticator. Okay. Okay, finally, let's look at this one as well. Anti-malware software. Okay, although you see this is also in chapter 8. I've talked about it as well in chapter 8. We are running your antivirus software. We are just constantly checking for virus attacks. Okay, in fact, they check software on files before they are loaded on the computer. They carry out what we call heuristic checking. It will check everything on your system to check any possible viruses, and if there's any files or softwares that are found infected, then a quarantine is carried out, which allows the virus to be deleted, allows the users to make decision about the deletion. Sometimes you may even have to delete the software or the program as well. Okay, let's look at electronic conferencing. It's a long one, but I wanted to break it down into bits, but I just feel like just going everything straight. So you can just always pause it and continue from where you've stopped. Electronic conferencing. Let's look at it. In electronic conferencing, we have three, and I'm just going to go straight to the point of this. We have the video conferencing, audio conferencing, and web conferencing. Okay. Now, for video conferencing, is a communication method that uses both video and sound. And usually for video conferences, it's a substitute to face-to-face. Okay, people will have Zoom meetings, you know of your Zoom, Google Meet meetings, you have them between numbers of people who can be in different parts. There are people who can be in different countries and they are connected to the same meeting in real time. Okay, now there are basic hardware that are needed. Webcam, a large monitor screen or television screen, microphones, speakers. Okay, usually whenever you want to have that kind of virtual meeting, you have to agree on a time and date. The video conferencing setup needs to be checked before the meeting goes live. Webcam will need to be placed, to be on place in the correct position. Microphone as well. Of course, you have to, there's somebody have to be on ground to ensure that, you know, in both parties, they can hear each other as much as possible. Like I said, we're not going into details because we just want to look at the main part. Now, most time you might need a webcam or a microphone software driver that ensures that this webcam and microphone transmits the image and sound to the world. Other delegates. What are the advantages of video conferencing? As people in their own building, it is more easier to access important information or bring in experts at key parts of the conference. It is possible to hold conferences at short notice, even though you're in different country. Okay? Not traveling physically to meetings reduces cost. What are the costs? Traveling costs. Paying accommodation. Imagine if you need to have a seminar talk in Istanbul. That will save you traveling costs, airplane flight cost, flight ticket cost, accommodation, hotel accommodation, right? And even taking people away from their work because they actually have work to do, right? So it helps, right? That's a very good advantage. Okay, also it's better to use it than have delegates travel to potentially unsafe environment, like for example Sudan, right? And you want to have delegations with these parties, you can have them online, right? Instead of traveling in person and maybe a bomb or something miss you on the way, you know, it is also better for the environment because less travel, less pollution. Okay, it connects people in organization who might be otherwise left out. For example, people who are not based on the headquarters, it can also connect them as well. Okay, another disadvantage is there is potential time lag. If your network is not strong, you discover there is that lag. Okay, somebody must have said something, and then that's why you're not hearing what the person has said. Images can be checked. Due to poor internet connection, you cannot be able to see the person. There could be that poor and network performance or poor bandwidth. Sometimes in Zoom, you see that the network is unstable. Okay, and it is expensive to set up. Okay, both the hardware and softwares are expensive to purchase. Okay, another advantage is time zones. Okay, there's always a problem if the delegate is in another country, for example, South Korea. Probably when Korea is at night, that's when you're in the afternoon, right? So there's always going to be that time zone differences, okay? And not everybody knows how to use Zoom, Google Meet. I mean, you have to train people how to use, and these are the two most popular video conferencing. So you have to train people on how to use it, which can be and time consuming. Okay, now the whole system relies on good internet connection, so it means that if your internet connection is not strong, you will have a poor bandwidth, poor internet connection, the signal strength. If it breaks down, it can be unstable. That's the whole idea. So this thing works with a good, so if there's no good internet connection, you might not be able to see the person in real time. There's lagging, there's a lot of things on it, which is a great disadvantage. Okay, audio conferencing. Now, probably in Zoom, you guys have probably seen what we call a phone number. So you can either join through the Zoom link or through the phone number. That's if you're based in the US. Okay, I think it works in the US and the UK. Okay, then we have Google Voice as well, where you can hold meetings through a phone call. Okay, although for Google Voice, it's available in the US, in the UK, in Switzerland, in Belgium, in Canada. You can check it out on the website, voice.google.com. So you check it out, right? So for audio conferencing, refers to meetings held between people using what? Audio. Blue Jeans are good examples of audio conferencing. Okay, even Google Meet has it. But although Google Meet is, you don't really need a phone number for it, though. You need a PIN. Okay, so audio conferencing can be done over what? A standard telephone network, right? Now, we'll talk about the audio conferencing, although that one is a modern electronic audio conferencing. We're talking about the audio conferencing, we're talking about joining two telephones that uses telephone network. Okay, now the organizer of the phone conference is given two pins by the phone company. One pin is for the organizer, and the other pin is for what, the participants. Now, the organizer is going to contact the participants, inform them of their pin, and then again, inform them of what, the date and time of what, the phone conference. Then, when the phone conference is about to start, okay, the organizer will dial the conference phone number, and once they are connected, then you have to put in what, that pin. Okay, so this is a picture of it right here, where you see a lot of people that are calling. So when the meeting is about to start, you call, and then everybody can be able to join in into it on the phone. So what do you need? You need a standard, an internet phone, a Google Voice, like I said, a standard phone, an external microphone or speaker, and of course a computer. And web conferencing, what we call webinars or webcast. Okay, that simply means which is what we are using now. Okay, Zoom is also a video conferencing and also a webinar. Okay, there are multiple tools. Now, for webinars, that means meetings held over the web. Okay, so multiple computers are used in this system, all connected over the internet. It's the same thing as video conferencing. It's carried out in real time and allows the following types of meetings to take place: presentation, online education, business meetings, etc., etc. Okay, some of the main features is slide presentation. Hosts can share live presentations, the use of whiteboards, right? You can transmit images or video using the webcam. And then again, you can also play videos online for everyone to be able to see what you're talking about. And I think with this, we are done.